Welcome, everyone, to another episode of the Prepared Mindset Podcast, bringing you along on my journey for growth, development, learning in the tactical space for the more prepared civilian. As always, I am your host, Austin. Happy to have you guys aboard with us this week. At the time of this recording, we are officially 1 week out, so T-minus 7 days from the kickoff of SHOT Show 2026, which is, I believe, the 48th iteration of SHOT Show. And if you guys don't know what that means, that's Sports Hunting Outdoors Trade Show. So SHOT Show 2026. It'll actually be my first time attending and really, really looking forward to the opportunity, right, to connect with folks, to network with some business partners and things like that, and talk about what we're able to do here with the Prepared Mindset Podcast to help support those partners, and then, you know, also what they can do to help support us. And then also, right, to just connect with the homies, man. Like, I've already talked to a couple different folks and have some plans laid out for things like checking out the college championship game the night before SHOT Show kicks off Monday night, sitting down with the homies, watching that, catching up with folks that are going to be out there, catching with some folks who are going to be there but not actually attending SHOT Show, which, yes, is a thing. I think if you hang out in this community long enough, right, you do find those people that really love the connections and the I guess like the events and things that go on that are SHOT Show adjacent, I'll say, but don't really find a lot of value in attending just because of their particular place in the community, which is also really cool. Doesn't mean they're not around. It just means that they're prioritizing their time and spending their time connecting, you know, with a select handful of people and having some really, really good discussions with, you know, for whatever they do. But I've never really been to a trade show, to be honest with you. So this would be a really new experience for me and my wife. You know, you guys know that she's behind the scenes helping with things here. So she'll be traveling with me. Really, really looking forward to, you know, attending. And more importantly, I think, man, just getting out of like the mid 20 degree weather here in Michigan that we're experiencing, right? And going to Vegas where it's like the low 70s and high 60s, the coldest it gets the 3 or 4 days that we're there is like 44 degrees at night. And that's still 5 degrees higher than I think today's high was here. I think it was like 39 was the high today. So to give you guys some perspective, it's going to be a really welcome change of pace. I don't typically do that. I don't usually travel during the winter months. You know, you get to the end of the year and you use up all your PTO for your day job. And then you get into the beginning of the year and you're like, well, I don't want to start the year off by taking a bunch of days. But I was able to roll over about a week's worth of PTO. And on top of that, you know, the Monday is Martin Luther King. So that's a bank holiday. I work in finance and we have the day off, so I'm only taking 4 PTO days. So at any rate, really looking forward to it. I know there's already been some announcements about stuff that's going to be unveiled there. I think L3 has announced that they have something new and awesome to share with us. I think there were some reels out there that were teasing a new product from OpsCore. I just saw today a pair of posts, right, from HoloSun, an even larger window pistol dot. I think it's the 507 Max or Pro Max, so it's even larger than their competition optic, which was already the size of a small TV. And then they have something that's like very reminiscent, I think, to like the Wilcox Boss, where it's like a red dot with an infrared laser built in. So that's not necessarily new, because obviously there's something on the market that compares to that. But if you guys know HoloSun, you know they've been bringing good quality products to the market at an affordable price, beating out a lot of competitors for the last decade or so. So I'll be, you know, interested in taking a peek at that, seeing what's going on with it. I won't be participating in any of the desert shoots or, shooting events this year. I just, you know, my first time out, I wanted to concentrate on the actual show itself and prioritize the business meetings part of it. So all good stuff. Really, really looking forward to it. And I'm sure you guys will probably be looking forward to it, I'm sorry, to some degree with all of the content and media that's coming out. So you'll see hundreds and hundreds of videos and reels and pictures of different products that are going to be, coming out over the next, it could be as soon as something that's just released this next week. It could be something that takes 6 months. It could take, in some cases, right, we've seen stuff like the Civilian OGL and the HoloSun Iris that takes a year or 2 years from the point of inception, inception being where they tease it at SHOT Show, right, to actually hitting the civilian market. It seems like it's becoming somewhat more common for companies to deliver vaporware at SHOT Show to build up excitement, and then they release it. And that's, you know, prototyping's a thing, right? You do it in all industries, right? I used to go to the North American International Auto Show, you know, living in Detroit every year and see these wonderful concept cars. They looked so cool and they had so many cool features. And then you realize none of it really makes it to market because it's just not scalable. It's too expensive to produce. When you do the numbers on it, how many of these do we anticipate to sell? What's the price point? All that stuff. And then, you know, maybe about 10% of all that stuff actually makes it out to the public market. But, you know, speaking of people I am looking forward to catching up with at SHOT Show are our sponsors and my friends over at Custom Night Vision. You guys, if you want to check out what Custom is able to offer, their website is customnightvision.com. You can head over there and you can reach out to the team directly. I was actually just having a phone conversation with somebody today and talking about, hey, yeah, you can, man, you can reach out to them directly. They have a chat function. It's built into the lower right-hand corner of their website. You can actually talk to the team. It's actually, I keep saying actually, it's going to be Trevor or Ben or Kevin. They're going to answer your questions. They're going to give you their perspective, the answers right on what you're looking for. So when you go to Custom, you can have the most transparent buying experience that they can possibly provide, which is a rare thing in the night vision game today with so many questions and all the confusion right around FOM and, you know, signal to noise ratio and EBI and all these things. Like, what does it all mean? People don't know. They don't understand. And they're really, you know, genuinely, I would say, scared of making a poor purchase. The team at Custom is there to help you through this process, answer your questions, and get you in the best unit possible for your budget, for your needs. Again, it's customnightvision.com. When you get to the homepage there, there's actually two big blue buttons. You can pick monocular builder or binocular builder. You can custom set up your device. So something like a set of MH1s from Lloyd Innovations. Going to be catching up with those dudes out at SHOT Show as well. You can pick, you know, regular mil-spec glass, some boom slang optics, or you could even get some RPO 4.0 shaved down lightweight lenses. You can pick your intensifier tubes, whether that's, you know, white phosphor L-bit or L3, or maybe some green NNVT tubes because you're balling on a budget. You can also bundle it together with a helmet, a laser, any number of other accessories, all ready and in stock for you at customnightvision.com. If you guys already have the night vision, cool. You need the helmet, you need the mounts, you need the lights, you need lasers from companies like B.E. Myers and Steiner, and the list goes on, right? Head on over to customnightvision.com and check all that stuff out for yourself today. I'm really looking forward to catching up with those dudes. They're huge, huge supporters of everything that I do here with Prepared Mindset. And additionally, I do want to take a moment to mention, if you guys aren't following us on our YouTube channel, on our Instagram, you know, we have a Patreon that you guys can look up as well. Man, that stuff goes so far to help us. And we are so close to hitting 5,000 subscribers on YouTube. That's like my next benchmark goal. Things just blew up at the end of the year, and it was really awesome to see. Shout out to Concrete Cowboy and his channel for hyping us up. I think a lot of it came over as traffic from there. Again, really cool to see the community actually being a community and riding the wave right on into 2026 and into SHOT Show. But this week on the podcast, I'm actually sitting down with Bully from Almost Covert and Tether Group. You guys liked the conversation I had with Irish from Almost Covert. We talked about who he is, what Almost Covert, I'll say, was and then is now, because they've kind of gone through this this transformative phase of what they are, who they are, what their like purpose really. You know, when we think about purpose, it can be a pretty deep subject. Not, hey, we're just an internet page that does this, like, but what truly the purpose behind Almost Covert is, and then Tether Group and what that is and how that was born and everything. So I thought it'd be really a cool opportunity to reach out to Bully and talk to him as well, because he's probably, I'm going to assume, right, got a different perspective on things. He has a different story to tell, and certainly one that I think that all of us are going to get a lot out of. Last time we talked with Irish a lot about the work that they're doing overseas with human trafficking and helping to combat that. And to be completely frank with you guys, man, the astounding numbers that he was able to provide, I mean, they were loose statistics, but the astounding numbers behind how many arrests are made each year over there, it was a very small number. That's why it's so shocking, right? And also just to put into perspective that as big an issue as this is globally, and as much awareness as we all really do have about it, it's a very, I don't know, it's a very depressing topic that people, they speak out against, but don't actually do a whole lot to address in many instances. So what these guys are doing, the work that they're doing and everything that they're a part of is a really, really big deal. And I'm super pumped to be able to sit down and have the conversation this week. So with that, I am going to shut the hell up, because you guys are probably sick of hearing me talk about you know, everything I talk about. And we're going to get on over to this week's discussion with Bully. Here we go, guys. Bully, dude, what's going on, man? Welcome to the podcast.
Dude, I'm super excited to be here, brother. Just going to do my best to not fumble through this conversation too much and try to make as good of a showing, if not slightly outdo Irish his last one.
He, if I'm remembering correctly, maybe it was somebody else. I think he said he was pretty nervous when we started. By the end of it, it was easy. So you'll be good. I have to ask, like, I know you guys have like, how can I put this? You guys have government names, but then you also have like the monikers and stuff that you use with AC. How did you end up with yours? Like Irish, I get, cause he looks like he's a leprechaun, but like yours is different. So I didn't know how you got there.
Yeah, man. So the that's funny. So the joke, brother, is that I'm short and stout like a pit bull, because you know I'm not the most vertically inclined individual. I'm pretty short, so I decided that I'd be as wide as I was tall, and that's kind of where I got that nickname of like a bully breed.
Oh, okay. Well, whatever works, man. It's always interesting to hear when like certain guys. Years ago, and I had Dutch Moyer on, and I was like, is that just his first name? Like, no, his first name is Chris. And I'm like, how did you get the nickname Dutch? He goes, oh, I just did the Arnold Schwarzenegger get to the chopper thing like a bunch in the 80s, and people started calling me Dutch. I'm like, you know, that's actually pretty cool. I don't know what I was expecting there, you know. So those stories sometimes are pretty good. Yeah, I
no,
was just
they're always
curious.
The best.
Yeah.
It's especially like when they come organically like that, except for, you know, there's one guy on team, his name's Stretch, and he'll swear up and down that we gave him that name, and no one can recall giving him that name
How I
until
got
one
there.
day he was doing like an ad read for us, and he introduced himself as Stretch, and we all lost it because, again, no one can remember giving him that name. So it's now stuck. Now he is Stretch, but
Stuck with it. Yeah. Well, that's,
yeah.
I don't know if you've ever seen, How I Met Your Mother, the TV show, but, they have like, there's a book in there called the Bro Code. And, you know, the one character references all the time. Anyways, I got a printed copy of it for Christmas, like, I don't know, fucking 15 years ago or something. My brother got it for me. And there's one in there. It says, if a bro tries to give himself a nickname, it is your responsibility as his bro to give him a different and more demeaning nickname. So that's just how the game is played, right? Like, we can't, it's not our fault. That's just the rules.
100%. Yeah.
Yeah.
We've got to follow the rules.
Yeah. So, at any rate, let's just, if you would, man, like, can you introduce yourself to the audience and maybe just, explain a little bit about who you are, what you've done, and like kind of what you're doing today with, I know you got stuff going on with Almost Covert, there's stuff with Tether Group and like a bunch of shit going on.
Yeah, man, absolutely. So, long and short of it, brother, you know, I come from a complete civilian background. I know that a lot of dudes that you have on show and a lot of dudes that we have on team have a lot of vet backgrounds, Leo backgrounds, things like that. I'm a little different in the fact that I'm a civilian. And, you know, started with AC. I founded it alongside Irish about 3 years ago. We're coming up on 3 years now. You know, really just got into the more intentional training, really trying to push boundaries and capabilities there. And then as of just lately, this last year, we officially founded Tether Group, which we're pushing really hard on that. Super grateful. And like, I mean, really just grateful is the best way to put it all for the unassuming route that I took. Like, I never thought I would have gotten here. I just kind of did what I wanted to do, followed my heart, did what I thought was right. And man, I'm at a loss for words for where I found myself. As far as that, that's on the tactical side of things. I'm also, you know, a trainer. That's kind of like my bread and butter, my day job, if you will. I do personal training. I've done that for like 7 years. It's a beautiful craft. I absolutely love that. But yeah, man, just trying to continuously push the boundaries and really try to make AC and specifically Tether now is really the focal point of our collective effort. So I'm just, again, very grateful for it all.
How did you end up in, because I know when we talked with Irish, it was, you know, the AC thing kind of started as, I mean, really kind of as the way most people would imagine, right? Just a bunch of friends, you like gear and guns and having a good time. And like, hey, we'll just make an Instagram page. It seems it's almost like the logical progression of the universe in 2020. I have to learn how to say it. 2026 now, right? Like everybody does it, you know, and then everyone's online presence takes a different path to whatever. Like some people fizzle out, some people do it a couple of years, whatever. How did you get to the point where you just like with training and shooting and everything? Because there's the community's huge, right? And we still have people that never get to the point of buying a plate carrier, rifles, gear, any of that stuff. What was like your early introduction to the community like?
I'm very fortunate in the fact that it didn't take me a lot of trials and tribulations to find my community, right? Or my group of guys. In the beginning, man, like, you know, so I grew up, you know, teacher, I'm sorry, I grew up learning how to shoot off of my grandpa's back patio up in the woods, right? With a little BB gun shooting soda cans, right?
You bastard. Ugh, the upbringing we all wanted. Yeah.
So that's how I learned how to shoot, right? And then, like, I always, you know, loved and enjoyed guns and things of that nature. But I was always a, you know, the Joe Schmo bench rest shooter, right? You know, static shooting out to X amount of range, X amount of yards at a public range. It wasn't until I went out to a range day that I just so happened to get invited to by one of my clients, funny enough, to go shoot, and that's where I ended up meeting Irish, and it was the first time that I ever walked and shot at the same time. And it was so dramatically humbling of an experience. It was one of those things where, like, you know, you have the Dunning-Kruger effect, right? Of like when you are a novice in something, you think you know everything, and then the second that you start to become more adept at a specific task, you realize you know fucking nothing. It was so much one of those. Like, the second I tried to move and shoot at the same time, I was so totally and wholly humbled by that experience that I knew I needed to conquer it. I knew I needed to continuously push and improve and see a marked difference in that, because I'm a very competitive guy and I can't be the worst guy on the range. So
That's
that was kind of the
it's such a
start.
weird benchmark that guys set for themselves. Like, you know, I've had so many people tell me, like, look, I don't even care as long as I'm not the worst one. I'm like, that's like, bro, I think you could probably do better. It is shocking. And I'm guilty too, because I went to my first couple classes, like, as long as I'm not the worst one there, I've done okay. And it's the worst way to approach it mentally.
100%. No, 100%. But you know, it's definitely something that I've grown out of now, where it's like, if I'm even in the middle of the pack and, like, a lot of the training now, it's like, okay, like, you know, what's the adage? If you're the smartest guy in the room, you're in the wrong room. Right. And so now it's a little bit more of a mature aspect or a mature approach to it, where it's like, hey, I don't want to be even toward the top, the upper echelon. I want to do as best as I physically can and perform as well as I can. But seeking out those uncomfortable environments, or those environments that are challenging, or even outside of your bandwidth slightly, that's really what forces improvement. And that's something that you have to learn to love, right? You have to learn to love that feeling of inadequacy, where it's not like a, you suck, you're horrible, that's why you're bad at this. It's a, hey, this is a really hard thing to do. This is a really challenging thing to do. And these guys have put more time in than you. And now it's your responsibility to do the same.
No, it's the mindset is, and this is funny, because like when I started the podcast, people used to message me or comment on posts like, mindset is the most retarded shit I've ever heard. Like, mindset's not gonna do a fucking thing for you in a fight. I was like, I'm gonna respectfully disagree, man. I do not like, yeah, it is crazy that we still in this community have those issues. You know, it's a huge deal, because everyone, I think, physically, and you as a trainer, I'm sure I've seen this, like, everyone's different physically. Like, they walk in the door and if does in a different physical state when they leave, or then the next person, right? Whether they're short, right, tall, some people are trying to lose weight to be more healthy, some guys are trying to put weight on to be more healthy, and it's like, you can't really you, there's the, if you're trying to build a constant, I think mindset is probably the only one you could really look at with one person to the next five and go, here's one thing we can start with. It's like a universal way to approach this, because otherwise everything's going to be different.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the mindset is the one thing that's wholly and unequivocally in your control, right? Like, there's a lot of variables and factors and things outside of your control that it's just the hand you're dealt. But your way that you look at the world, your way that you interact with challenges, or you know, struggles and things like that, or adversity, That is 100% your control, your decision. So no, I'm a really big fan of mindset personally. I think it's a super valuable focal point. And anyone who kind of brushes it off like that, I think that they're more or less they're making a straw man argument of like, oh, well, your mindset isn't going to save you. It's like, no, like the mindset alone isn't, but the mindset is what pushes you to be better. The mindset is what pushes you to be prepared for that, right?
Yeah, that desire, right, to learn the next thing, to figure, like, or even just to, like you said, put yourself in a situation where you're surrounded by people better than you, right? That feeling of inadequacy or being comfortable being uncomfortable is
Yes.
a huge thing, and especially in today's day and age. So from there, right? I mean, you connected with Irish and everything. How did that all start turning into like training and stuff? Because I went out to the range a couple of times when I first got into things. It wasn't until I discovered the like YouTube 2A rabbit hole that I got into it. But what was it like for you?
Yeah, so when I started training with Irish, he had already taken a couple of classes and things like that, and he obviously has his vet background, where he did a lot of CQB and things like that. Same with and then he went into to the classes with Orion and worked alongside Jared, and he was trying to distill some of that information in with me, and I was fascinated by it, like right from the jump. And I get a little obsessive over things when I really enjoy them. So it was something as simple as I remember one of the easy drills that I was given that he gave me was learning how to turret properly, turret your torso and be able to pan doors. And I struggled with that a lot because I was a bodybuilder and I lost a lot of my mobility. A lot of my thoracic mobility was just shot. I had no mobility in my hips. I was just super tight. And I remember just struggling with that core premise of just being able to point your hips in a different direction than you're looking. And he showed me a drill of, pinning the muzzle on a corner essentially and just walking in half circles around that in both directions. And I would do that for hours, like an
Trying to figure
obsessive
out,
amount of time, right? Trying to just get that ingrained.
are you right-handed?
I am, yeah.
Okay, yeah. So going from the left side of the door to the right was probably not as bad, but coming back the other way where no one can fucking figure out how to do it. Yeah, especially 'cause you mentioned like your mobility, and it's always like crazy to me in classes. I see Jason demo it and stuff, and he's got it figured out down to a science. And I watch people like, oh yeah, I can do that. And they go up and do it, and it's like, no, dude, that's not even close. Like, what did you just do there?
Yeah,
I think
they
that,
start doing karaoke with their feet.
yeah, which is like the worst thing you could fucking do. The weird crossover back and forth. Like, I remember doing that in football, and I was like, I fucking hate this. And then I started, I spent the next like 10 years doing it with marching band, and that's, you don't alternate it. It's always the right. There's one foot that goes in front when you're marching. But anyways, and it's like people have to like take it step by step and just realize like, hey, when's the last time you did turn at the hips? Like you realize your flexibility, your mobility, just your overall physical health is not necessarily where you perceive it to be, just because you've never, like you had mentioned a couple moments ago, you'd never taken yourself out of a normal day-to-day, I guess day, put yourself in one of those situations. And had to realize, like, okay, my mobility's kind of shitty. Like, I can't stretch here. I can't do this. I'm tripping over my own fucking feet. This should be easy. And I've seen people get real frustrated in classes with it because they're like, why can't I do this? It's just walking to the left, but it's a struggle.
Yeah, I mean it's one of those things where it looks so easy, and that's realistically a lot of things in general, right? That's a very broad statement of like, hey, this one movement, this one tactic, this one XYZ, it looks very easy externally, but then as soon as you try to force your body to do it, you start to realize just how much coordination or mobility or just aptitude that it requires in order to actually perform.
I
So.
mean, the nice part though is if you can figure that out, the rest of it's pretty fucking easy. That's like the
Yeah,
most physically awkward part.
no, 100%. And that's the fun part, man. It's like it's the skill curve, right? Once you start to get over some of the initial challenges, then you can build and build and build, and then you can look back on yourself like, man, I have videos on my phone still that I'll go back and look at every now and then of like the first couple of times that I tried to walk through a door, and I looked like an idiot. like just absolutely just like bad.
Well, that's
And
a
it's always
that's a
fun to look
thing.
back on.
Yeah, I mean that's a thing. Like people can, you can teach your friends, people can teach you how to do that, right? How to like slide through or flow through a door, how to make entry, whatever you want to call it. Making somebody look good doing it is a totally different endeavor. And that's usually just comes with practice. Like you just have to build your own level of comfort. It's just repetitions and repetitions, and eventually at some point it starts looking fluid. And that could be 10, that could be 10,000. I don't know. It's different for everybody. But yeah, some people are like, well, I got through the door. I go, well, that's the important part. Like, why do I feel like it looks goofy? Because it does. We're just gonna do it more. And
Yeah,
that's it.
100%.
That's the beauty of the training behind it, is you just have to. And you'll get where you if you do the right behaviors, right? I imagine it's kind of the same with personal training or with working out, personal health, right? The right behaviors will get you to where you want to be, as long as you have the mindset, right, and the determination to push yourself down that path. Because if it was super easy, right, everybody would do it. And very clearly, we don't. We have a huge weight problem in this country, so very rare, I'm sure, to see people that are that motivated.
Yeah, no, it's I mean, as far as that, it's like you said, it's relatively the same foundational approach, right? Of, hey, we have these small building blocks that we have to conquer, and everyone wants to get straight into like, oh, I want to work on my bench press, or I want to be like super fast here, I want to be like, be able to squat 405 or this or that. And it's like, hey, man, I need you to learn how to squat your body first. Like, a lot of people have, again, it's a Dunning-Kruger effect of like everyone thinks they know how to squat. And the actual percentage of people that come into a gym and can do a flawless squat is very, very shockingly low.
I hate squatting. I have hurt myself more times with squatting than anything else I've done in the gym. I am not I'm not a fan. I do not
Well, lucky
like
for
it.
you, now you know a really good coach and I'll fix you.
Dude, I one time was on a the worst time was on a fucking Smith machine. I'm like, oh, this will be cool. Like, this is supposed to help me. It was I wasn't even a ton of weight. I just remember I was like my second or third rep. I go down, everything's good. I start coming back up, and something did something, and I like, this is not right. And it racked it. And of course, it was like the week before I was going to an OTG class. So I get to class, and I'm eating bare back and body like they're fucking Skittles and shit. And then it was just miserable. I will say, when people are looking at physical fitness, personal fitness, work with somebody if you're going to start doing shit like that. Because back pain, like we got into drills doing, I mean, this was dry room clearing where just you're brushing and going back to back to clear space. And my brother was in the class and he bumped into me and my whole back spasmed and seized up. I almost fell over. I was like, I can't fucking do this. This is so painful. It was fucking stupid. I regret my decision to not just like, hey, you know what? The actual squat rack isn't available right now. I'll go do something else. I'll come back later. I'm never touching a Smith machine again as long as I live. It was really bad.
Yeah, I'm sorry you went through that, man. I know that I've had some pretty severe back injuries myself, not from weightlifting, but just from being dumb. And I know those aren't fun. So I'm glad that, I mean, it sounds like hopefully you're doing okay now.
Yeah,
And that's
now,
loosened
because
up a
I
little bit on you.
stop doing dumb shit.
That always helps. It always helps to not do dumb shit.
My chiropractor was so pissed at me because I had just been in there like 3 weeks earlier, and he's like, yeah, just take it easy. I was like, oh yeah, for sure, man. Like, it's gonna be fine. No, he's like, what the hell happened? Literally, with the first thing he said to me when I walked in, I was like, well, you told me, and I thought, and yeah, it was, you just gotta sit there and take it. You're like, all right, can you fix me, please? Thank you. So, where do you and with all of that, right? So, like, weightlifting is important, in general, but like with your background in the personal training side, and people talk about fitness in our community like a ton, where do you see those things intersect the most? Because I think it's somewhat unreasonable to expect everybody to get super big, right? But you should have a degree of physical fitness, stamina, cardio, yes, strength in general. Where do you see like the biggest areas of opportunity where people are succeeding and or beginning to succeed and then also failing?
Yeah, man, I love that. So when it comes to that, that's a pretty heavy question. It's the reason I say that is because you have to look at what you're trying to do and build the physicality around that, right? For example, if you're, if you're, a grunt, right, or an 11 Bravo, and you're just supposed to be hoofing a pack, right, for an unforeseen amount of miles, then obviously you need to prioritize, a lot of your endurance, a lot of your cardiovascular health, and things like that. Like, everyone needs to prioritize that. The other end of the spectrum, though, is people will, like, for example, myself, when I first got into this, again, I came from a bodybuilding background. I was way too big. I was way too heavy for my frame. So I'm 5'7" on a good day, and I was 209 lean, right? So I was at like 8% body fat, over 200 pounds, and it was just not conducive to any kind of endurance performance, right? I couldn't run, I couldn't really ruck anything. I'd blow up really, really fast on any kind of endurance event or anything like that. Now I can fucking drag anyone anywhere, right? I can move a ungodly amount of weight, but it's like, is that really the goal? So a lot of it is look at what tasks are you supposed to perform, and then really neck down on those. For example, like a lot of like what I have our team on, and we're working on building out some more rigorous fitness standards for everyone. But is what you would consider a hybrid athlete, right? Like, you still want to be strong, you want to be powerful, you want to be explosive, but you also need to be able to put a pack on and go hoof it, 10 miles. You need to be able to run for 4 to 5 miles at a time, uninterrupted, at a decent pace, right? And that's a hard paradigm to start, because those two training philosophies are foundationally juxtaposed to each other for endurance and strength. And when so as a beginner, man, it's one of those things, like, first just focus on getting the weight off, right? Make sure that you're on a relatively lean frame, and then you can start working on, your speed and endurance and things like that. But again, it's just look at what job are you trying to perform and build your body around that job. And it's the reason that you see, guys like that make it out of, go to Ranger school, right? They come back and they're all 130 pounds, right? Soaking wet, because they did nothing but ruck for the last however long, right? But then you see dudes that are pallbearers, right? And those guys are 400 pounds lean, because they're just absolute behemoths of men. And again, it's just one of those things where it's just like, understand what your task is and train to perform the best in that task. I don't know if that even remotely answered what you asked, but
No, I
I'm
mean
on a
it
tangent.
does. I mean, because you do see in the community a lot, and it's that's why I question if it's from people who really know, is they make comments about their fellow, I guess, people in the community, right? Like, oh, if you're not fit, you're gonna die. I'm like, okay, yeah, I get that, dude. Like, for sure. And in some cases, you can look at some people and say on one side or the other, like, dude, you're like 400 pounds. You are not in shape. And then the other side, it's like, hey, you're like 130 pounds and you look like you could get snapped in half if you got in a fight, but it's like, so it feels like it's a pretty like subjective opinion, like, oh, whether you're fit or not. Does that mean you need to get bigger or just thinner? Or what does that actually mean? And how do people know? So it's always one of the things that fascinates me the most, especially because the guys who are actually out there doing stuff, right? So whether it's like some of the stuff I hope we get into in a moment here, or I talked about with Irish last time with some of the overseas stuff. That's one set of skills and one set of requirements versus it could be what somebody did in the Marines 20 years ago. And I love that. Like, trust me, bro, I know I was in. I'm like, okay, well, what did you do? Because you could have been a HVAC tech for all I fucking know. And your requirements mean very little to me. Like, that, so it's always very interesting because people have different ideas of what that means, and yeah, I mean, like, I'm 6'3" and like 260, and like people don't believe that. I'm like, yeah, I need to lose more weight. And they're like, no, dude, there's no way. I go, yeah, I need to lose more. I'm not happy with it. I strength wise, I think I'm okay, but I want to get better there too. So it's always just like one of these relative things too, because like realistically, if I had to go out in the field and do stuff, what am I going to be called upon to do? My set of requirements will be very different from law enforcement or military or whatever have you. So it's always very interesting. And I think that Everyone, there multiple correct answers, really. Everyone could have the right answer or wrong answer. It just depends on what you're trying to achieve and what your
100%.
purpose is, you know?
Well, yeah, I mean, because that's the problem with just saying get fit, right? It's like, yeah, absolutely get fit, but what is fit, right? And again, that's a subjective answer. So it's in the sense of, fitness is whatever allows you to physically perform at your task to the highest capability, right? And everyone's task is going to be different, whether it's, Leo, active duty, prepared civilian, or whatever the case may be. You have to look at what that is and then train to that standard. Like, for example, I've always maintained a relatively good shape. I'm not in bodybuilding shape anymore or size anymore, but now I'm way more fit in terms of my endurance, right? I can run for the first time in my life. It's never been something that I'm good at. I didn't grow up as an athlete, by the way. I was a very overweight kid growing up. I grew up as a fat kid, which was super fun. I really enjoyed that. But
Being the short guy and the fat guy is
yeah, dude.
that's a tough road, man.
Dude, it was, it's, and I didn't even become funny. How fucked up is
I was
that?
just gonna say, I'm like,
Right.
you usually then you gotta find something else. Like you end up being the funny
Yeah.
one.
Yeah, no,
Damn,
I
bro.
got, dude, I got fucked. But yeah, man, no, I we went out to a, so for an example, right? We went out and did a land nav course, out in the mountains. And beautiful, beautiful time. And it was the first time we went out, first time I ever tried to do land nav, and my legs blew up within the first like mile, right?
Ooh, yeah.
And the total movement was in excess of like probably like 5 miles as a bird flies. So not accounting for terrain. And my legs blew up in the first mile. And I mean, I finished the entire event, but I just suffered through the rest of it, right? It was just, and I, I had to have a really sober conversation with myself and be like, dude, like this is not okay. Like this is not acceptable performance from myself in that event. It's not like it was super crazy. I wasn't doing any kind of like, delta level selection where you're running through a marshland in the middle of the night on no sleep. I was just, it was a beautiful day out. The weather was perfect, right? And my legs just absolutely blew up on me. And it was a decision. It's like, hey, this is unacceptable performance from you. So we're going to change your entire training paradigm, right? And now I ruck twice, or I ruck once a week, run twice a week, lift the other days. So again, it's just see what's wrong and fix it, right? And don't just rest on your laurels and be like, oh, well, I'm not built to be a runner, because I'm fucking sure as shit ain't. But I'm not going to accept that as an excuse or as a cop out to not run, to not, have these capabilities, right? When I can easily, not easily, but when I can integrate them into my programming and become better at them.
So when you're talking about trying to diagnose those kinds of like look at, hey, where I can get better, where I need to get better. How did that turn into, or I guess, how did you help translate that into what you've put together for the team of you guys to consistently work on? Just because, like we said, your goals, mission set, whatever phrase floats your boat, what you're called upon to do, right, is what you're called upon to do. It's a specific set of performative actions. Is it going to be, rucking 12 miles onto site? Maybe, I don't know, right? Like how did you go about like evaluating that and going, okay, this is what we shall be working on to stay in like a probably like 80%, I think, answered. Like, hey, we'll be able to do anything to up to like maybe 80%. Extremes, probably not. That's tough to do everything really well, you know. How did you put the training regimen together that was going to help everybody kind of get on the same page?
Yeah, so that's what would kind of fall under like a hybrid program, right? Now what I kind of just did, man, is just look at, okay, what are your baseline, what are you going to be accepted to or expected to do on a mission, right, at a baseline level. We have the fortune of we're predominantly going to be a vehicle-borne unit. So, the priority of a 30 mile, ruck with a 100 pound 100 pound pack isn't so much the main focal point. That doesn't mean that endurance isn't still a massive focal point though, because ultimately vehicles break, shit goes wrong, right? Might have to go chase a skinny off into a bush somewhere. And you still need to have the speed, the endurance, the stamina to be able to do all of that. But at the same time, it's a little bit more of a Leo capacity because again, it's vehicle borne and it's predominantly structure based. So then it's okay, we have a tall, big motherfucker on the team, right? Who's 250 with no kit. So now you start putting plates on him and a rifle and a helmet and a pack or whatever the case may be. And it's like, hey, you need to be able to move someone who's 300 pounds, right? 300 pounds dead weight, because it's that is the minimum requirement, right? That is what you may unfortunately be expected to perform on. And I'll be damned if any one of us is not at the level of physical capability in order to pull him out should the unthinkable go down. You know what I mean?
No, I mean, that's,
So,
you kind of have to look at
okay.
those things, the lightest, heaviest. That's a, I didn't even think, well, I mean, it makes sense. I didn't think about that. I was like, if somebody had to drag my ass out, that's like, yeah, let's be close to 300 pounds. Like, oh man, it kind of makes it makes me feel a little bit bad about it. You gotta, everyone's gotta be able to do that. Like that becomes your benchmark, and you set those expectations. And that's, I don't know if you've seen or like with people messaging online, like you see this stuff, everyone wants to create their new version of like the dirty civilian training group, which is totally awesome. I'm down for it, man. But then everyone like immediately is like, we're gonna set standards, bro. Like you're gonna have fitness standards. And like the first conversation you have with somebody is like, you're too fat, you're not strong enough, whatever. I'm like, maybe if there's not a reason to be that rigid, maybe just like have a friendly conversation first and like, hey man, we want everybody to be fit. Let's all go to the gym together or something. You know what I mean? Like, it's always interesting to see where people take it when you try to scale, like when you try to scale a standard. And,
It is challenging, man. Especially enforcing them, because it's like I understand where that kind of mindset comes from, like totally, right? But in my opinion, it's super misguided, because what you're trying to do fundamentally in these groups of individuals, if you will, is push people to be more than they currently are. Right, regardless of where that is. And if you're setting the bar at a level to where you're only accepting people who already have the physicality, have the skill sets in order to do in order to perform tactically or have the mindset of that high achiever upper echelon, you're one, necking down your pool like crazy. But two, you're getting away from, in my opinion, like if it's one of these communal groups, if you're closing the doors so quick, you're not going to be able to, you're not going to be able to help those individuals transform, learn, and grow who might become great assets, right? Maybe they're a little bit lacking at this moment, but the, hey, you're fat, get fucked, it isn't really a sustainable approach, in my opinion. It's like, now, if you're talking to someone who's overweight and they're like, oh, yeah, no, I'm overweight because, I do everything right and I eat perfectly and I do all of these things and I work out 17 times a week and I'm still fat and I know, I don't know, it's my genes. It's like, okay, yeah, fuck that guy. Like he doesn't have any accountability, right? Like, he's not taking responsibility for his own decisions and he's lying to you and himself about his situation. It's like maybe he's not a good fit. But if there's a dude who's, fell off the wagon a little bit, right? And maybe, indulged in a few too many beers along the way, it's just like, hey, dude, like, cool, let's run it. Stop drinking, get your shit in line, right? And there's an expectation of you to be better than you are right now. It again, in those kind of groups, I think that's kind of the better approach to take, because again, there's some diamonds in the rough. You just have to give people a reason to be better, right? A lot of people can self-start and can draw on their own reasons to improve and reach and search for more. But some people need an external, right? And sometimes that's just, if you give it to someone, then their eyes light up, dude, and they feel like a brand new man.
Well, and
But again.
those guys, they can end up being the ones you've been looking for. Like the guys who know how to do like magic shit, like make radios work that nobody else wants to invest the time and energy into. Like they might be a little bit overweight because they sit at a desk all day working on, technology and shit. They could be what you're looking for drones, comms, med, whatever. You know what I mean? Like that's why, I mean, personally, that's why, and you said it, you neck down your pool of like potential, friends or whatever people you're training with, right? Just when you like, you basically just judge the book by its cover. It's like if you give people a little grace, sometimes you'd be surprised what can be accomplished and who they can turn into and what they can bring to you. You know, it's cool when you see those people, they walk in. We have a guy that, you know, we've trained with a couple of times. Like if I would have physically assessed him, I'd have been like, yeah, you get your ass kicked in a fight. Like you're kind of, I don't want to say scrawny 'cause he's not, but he's just not, there's not a lot of meat on this guy. And it really brilliant when it comes to the tech stuff, radio setup, like ATAC, and got like a VPN and everything set up for everybody. And then went out of on his own, was like, hey, let's get everybody on a Zoom call. I'll walk everybody through how to do this right now. And then tested it like real time. Like, see, you can all see each other on the map. I was like, so you put this together in 20 minutes? Cause I could do 20 hours and probably not figure this out. Like, those are the guys you're looking for. You know what I mean? And it's crazy that people would write those folks off otherwise.
Yeah, no, 100%, man. You know, it's when you're trying to build a group, right? It's you're building a puzzle, right? And finding the people with the niche skill sets are get harder and harder the more niche the skill set becomes. If you just want 20 dudes that are all shooters and all can go ruck 15 miles and look really good in gym mirror selfies, then more power to you. But if you're trying to build a capable group of individuals, like you have to look at what you're trying to make and understand the approach that's required for that. Right. Like you had
Yeah.
mentioned, you know, it's you find diamonds in the rough all the time, man. All the time.
So with what you guys are doing now, right, the new direction, so Tether Group, the formation there, like can you talk a little bit about how that came to be its own entity and maybe a little bit of how like that kind of like that same thing, like you have a yeah, there's like a team of guys, right? And I see it all the time. People post on your stuff, they're like, hey, I'm getting out of you know the military, I'd love to join up, or I'm paraphrasing, I don't think they usually they say join up, that sounds kind of gay, but they ask about participating, I'll put it that way. And you know, which is cool, like it's always good to see interest and stuff. It's a deeper, you know, just talking with Irish and stuff, I know it's a deeper conversation than that, but how did that all get started, and how do you guys figure? How did you figure out like how to put this all together into like the team that works well now?
Trials and tribulations.
Gets in check.
No, man. So that's a great question. So for any listeners who didn't watch Irish's episode, just a really high level touch on what Tether is Tether is a anti-trafficking organization who directly works in the rescue side of things, not just the awareness side of things. So a lot of charities that we see in the anti-trafficking, or really just any charity in general, it's all awareness, awareness, awareness. Our goal, our mission is to go where those other people won't, and actually extract the trafficked victims out of the hell that they found themselves in. So as far as you know how that came to be, it was relatively natural. No, I guess not natural. It was more serendipitous than anything, I think is a good way to put it. As Irish had mentioned in his episode, you know, we'd done a couple of charity work, a couple we worked for a couple of charities both in Africa and not. And it was always very fulfilling work. You know, it was like, hey, this is really cool that we're making an impact, right? You know, so like for example, you know, I've been a serial entrepreneur my entire life. I've made a whole lot of money and lost even more of it. And even when I had, you know, a nice shiny bank account, it was like cool, I guess, you know, oh well, right? But as soon as you know you start actually doing work that directly transforms other people, that's where I found a lot of fulfillment, and that's what caused us to lean heavier and heavier into this. When we met the gentleman over who's now our counterpart over in South Africa, we very quickly just tried to help from afar, right? Where it was like, hey man, like what kind of support do you need? Like we love what you're doing, so on and so forth. You know, we were self-funding in terms of donations and you know, getting him a little bit of kit and mainly trying to provide some guidance where we could. And as we started to work more and more closely with him and really start to understand the quality of his character, you know, Irish and I just had a conversation one night. It's like, dude, like We can keep half-assing this and making a small, minute impact, or we can completely lean into it, right? And truly try to be as transformative in our efforts as we can be. And it's been a lot of work just to get to this stage, where now it's a public existing thing, right? It's real, it's tangible. It's no longer, just a couple of guys trying to do something. So it's been a lot of work to get to here, but yeah, man, we're just continuing to lean into it. Now, as far as like you'd mentioned, when people hit us up on the story and they're like, "Hey, dude, I'd love to participate. I'd love to join. I'd love to support," however the case may be, which blows me away. Firstly, it's super crazy every time we get one of those messages, and the amount of people and quality of people that have reached out. It's apparent that what we're doing has definitely hit a heartstring, which is awesome, and it's great to see the amount of people who give a shit, like, just to put it bluntly, right? So as far as, for anyone who's listening to this who wants to be involved in it in some way, shape, or form, right now, we're currently like collecting more resumes, right? Like, we have an inbox full of them of some awesome people, and once the we're in the stage to where we can expand the team and expand operations, and we'll be able to reach out to those individuals. But right now, dude, like, the best way to support is just engage, right? $5 a month here, whatever the case may be, or just tell your neighbor about what it is, right? Kind of bring some more light to the fact that hey, there's someone actually doing something about the problem instead of just pointing at the problem and then waiting for someone else to take care of it. I think is kind of
That's
the best way to wrap that up.
well, and that's that. Yeah, like it's shitty. Like, it's beyond shitty. Like, the words for what happens in human trafficking is like it's a lot, right? And I think because of how dark that get, how quickly that gets, how dark it is, right? like we don't. A lot of us here in this country, anyways, we don't have to deal with it. And it's one of those things you put in the back of your mind because it's just easier, right? The it's an inconvenient truth that it exists. Thinking about it is potentially one of the most depressing fucking things. Like, I could like it's I don't want to there's like one of those rules of the internet, everything always degrades back to Hitler. Like thinking about everything that happened in the Holocaust is tremendously awful, but it's over and it's been over for almost 100 years now, right? This is ongoing, and you know what I mean? So, like, that, to think about that, it's awful, it's sad, somewhat depressing. This is one of those things, like, you think about it and you're like, this is happening right now. We're not deploying troops anywhere. There's not a massive war to stop this. And then when you actually start looking into it, like, it gets even worse. The money, I've had a couple of guests that have talked about trafficking in general, and they, that Sound of Freedom, the movie that came out, and people were like, oh, up in arms, like, hey, we have to do something about this, which follows the same shitty media cycle of, hey, everyone cared for about 3 weeks, and then we rode the roller coaster back down, and it's, back to normal, and it's fucking awful, and then you start realizing the amount of money that goes into this here in the US and then the rest of the world too, and it's like, well, that's why it hasn't gone away. It's like the pharmaceutical industry, it's like they make too much money to go away. So it's become this like weird reality of life, and it's awful.
No, I mean, when you talk about the money aspect of it, a lot of people think like, oh yeah, obviously a large cash producer for a lot of these illicit organizations. But a lot of people don't understand how much money, right? So it's actually, I have a couple of stats here. But dude, via the ILO, the International Labor Organization, their estimation is between 150 and $170 billion annually.
That's
And illicit human trade and trafficking in persons, whether it's forced labor or sex trade. $170 billion, right?
which
It is
rivals
a gargantuan
which
problem.
And I don't, you know, and that's a number. And honestly, I'd love to research. So, you know what I mean? Like, when you look at the world's largest and most profitable industries, where does that actually rank with stuff people would consider, you know, quote unquote, normal? You know what I mean? Like, what does Apple make with iPods and iPhones and shit in a year? You know, or oil companies or fucking insurance companies is a good one too. You know what I mean? Like, and that's not a little bit of money. That's a ton of money for that industry. And yeah, it's why it's so hard to eradicate. You know, it's a wild number. I'm sorry, keep going. I think you had a couple.
Oh no, you're good. I was just gonna say, so a lot of Americans, specifically, right? And I don't mean that in a derogatory term, but we're grateful in the sense of we are in a you know, even though it's easy to get sensationalized by the media, we're in a stable country, right? We are, for the large and vast majority, incredibly safe where we are, right? We don't have these massive gang wars or civil wars or totalitarian regimes or whatever the case may be, right? Like, for all the issues that we have as a country, we are the safest fucking place to be, right?
Agreed. Agreed.
Now, even with that, like, trafficking's still a massive issue here, right? And there's a lot of great people and a lot of great federal agencies that are constantly just nose to the grindstone putting in work. But one point I wanted to make is like, trafficking isn't rare by any stretch of the imagination. We like to think it is, right? We like to put our head in the sand and not look at the issue, because, like you mentioned, it's gross, it's evil, it makes you just fucking depressed to look at, right? To look at the issue as for what it is. But it's really not a rare occurrence. It's not a mysterious thing, right? It's a very common issue, and a lot of times it's, you know, it's local, right? Most victims are trafficked. I mean, I can't speak, no, actually I can't speak for the United States as well, but globally the vast majority of victims are trafficked by their own family or by someone who they know and trust. It's not like people think it's these kidnapping white panel vans that say free candy on the side of them, and it's not that, man. It's you know, like, I got to make a little joke and try to bring some light into this,
No, for sure.
but realistically, man, the vast majority of these instances, of these cases, are parents, are siblings, are trusted adults who are introducing and trafficking these kids into these networks. And that's the problem, right? Is, you know, everyone's so concerned about, you know, oh, well, don't let your kid get kidnapped. Watch, absolutely, don't let that happen. Be very vigilant and aware of risks and dangers that are around you.
Yeah,
But
everybody write that down. Don't let your kids get kidnapped. That's
yeah, I know. I'm really, really coming out here with some hot takes, right?
groundbreaking. Jesus.
But yeah, man, a lot of times, especially in our AO, right? You know, mothers will have children specifically to traffic them, to sell them off. It is essentially a source of income. It's gross, but it happens, right? You know, and it, so it thrives and is emboldened. Trafficking as a whole is thrives and is emboldened where you have weak enforcement of the issue, right? With high concentration of wealth and movement, right? Which is one of the many reasons that we chose South Africa as our focal point, because it meets all three of those criteria, right? You have almost no enforcement of the issue. You have, you know, a vast amount of wealth, whether it's from, you know, tourists or just being a shipping hub of the entire world. And, you know, it's again, it's almost not enforced out there, which is disgusting. So.
And looking at that area, like when you guys were looking at working with that individual, and like, you know, I assume there's like a, how can I put this? There's like a amount of homework, right? Like you have to understand the region, you have to understand what's building to making this like the hub that it is for this shit, right? How did you guys go about that? I mean, like, because to me, like everything you just said triggers like a bunch of different thoughts, like understanding like import export and the dollars amounts that go with that, you know, median income or average median income. And when Irish is on, he was explaining there's areas there where it doesn't feel, I think people think of Africa and they're like, oh, you know, squalor, shithole, third world country, whatever. South Africa being much different in a lot of aspects. It's actually kind of a really nice place in certain areas, right? Everyone's got it. You know, I'm from Detroit. I understand you got nice parts and you got shitty parts, you know, and then you got really shitty parts where the bad stuff tends to happen. But like, how much like time did you guys spend like digging into that, like understanding really what the, 'cause I feel like with something like this, you have to understand the whole picture. You got to see the different angles to it because it's not a, the money's one part. It's not a skin deep issue. Like there's a lot of this stuff. I'm sure there's a cultural piece, there's a financial piece, there's all kinds of things that go into it.
No, I wish I could quantify that in terms of man hours for you, but that's just
It's too
it's
much.
really just it's too much. I mean, so it's been just shy of 2 years of like feverish effort, right? In terms of research, learning, setting things up, ensuring that we're ready, capable in order to go do this work. But no, you are exactly right, is that it's like, sure, it's easy to be like, oh, trafficking's bad, right? But then like, why this area? Why is it so prevalent in this part? And like what groups and networks are we looking at here? And why is this happening in this way? Because so like a lot of times, like, you know, obviously the big evil thing to look at is the sex trafficking aspect of it. But what a lot of people don't understand is in Africa specifically, there's also a large majority of it which is forced labor or modern day slavery, right? Where a great example is they're called Zama-Zama. They're quote unquote artisanal miners, which is a fucking hilarious name. They're people who go mine abandoned gold mines without permission, without any kind of work safety or anything like this, right? And they're trafficking children, especially young boys, into these caves in order to extract this gold. They're working with things like, you know, chemicals such as sodium cyanide and mercury and all of these really, really harsh chemicals in order to extract the gold out of these veins and refine it into a sellable condition. But that's forced labor, right? And it's not like these kids have any kind of PPE. They're sure as shit not in gloves when they're down there handling this stuff. You know, they're soaking up these chemicals and in these caves with no ventilation, massive risk of collapse and so on and so forth. So forced labor is a big one, but then also you get, which is still just objectively hard for me to fathom, you get there's a lot of witchcraft out there, right? Like, you know, we think of voodoo witch doctors and things like that, and we think of, you know, funny movies. But that's like, it's real shit out there. Like there's child sacrifice consistently, right? Whether it's the whole child or at sometimes appendages, right? You know, they'll amputate young children in order to make certain sacrifices, or witch doctors who are telling their purveyors, right, that the way that they're going to get rid of their AIDS is to sleep with a 3-year-old boy. Like, just disgusting, disgusting behavior. And it's like, you know, it's easy to look at Sound of Freedom and be like, oh, it's all these rich oligarchs who are doing this, right? It's like, yeah, that's a huge problem. Like, that is a massive issue. But that's not the extent of it, right? There's many, many, many layers to the onion, if you will.
Yeah, and the just the more the further you get into it, the worse it is. You know, like it almost by com the shitty part, at least, like it almost makes the oligarch side of it seem like a better alternative. Which is terrible in the scope of the conversation. Like you would almost hope for that rather than, hey, I'm gonna have my arm cut off to be sacrificed to for somebody to win massive wealth in the future or whatever. I don't know. Like, yeah, and that's so. And what you guys are doing over there, that's it. You rescue and extraction, pretty, I would say, indiscriminately of any of that, right? It's like, hey, you guys are looking for, where can we help? Not one specific piece of it. Not, I mean, am I on the right track with that?
Yeah, 100%. It's not a the issue is too vast in order to, no, not even too vast. The issue is too important to try to neck down a specific focus, right? Like, it doesn't matter where the kid is. It's like, fundamentally, that's a child, right? It is a child who is trafficked. who knows only evil, and if there is no intervention, the odds of them dying in that situation of only understanding and knowing and living in evil, without intervention, that's an incredibly, incredibly high probability. So, I can't. It's too dramatic of an issue to be like, oh, well, we're going to only rescue these kids. I'm going to do as much with everything that I'm given, right? And try to make a really marked impact to the best of my capability.
And do you I'm not sure if you guys have insight onto it, with the program you guys or yeah, program or group that you guys work with over there. Are those, you rescue these kids, are they able to get them? Is it because here's the thing that makes this difficult too. When you think about it, you guys operate in South Africa, which is not, I remember I talked about this with Irish. Like, people don't realize that's not just a region of the continent. It's actually a country. South Africa is a country. So is it just get those kids relocated to someplace in country, get them out of country? With the problem when it's cultural is that just out of country sometimes is not enough to say, well, you'll never have to deal with this ever again. Like, if it's just to a different country, there's still a pretty high probability you're still dealing with all these same evils and dangers. And I don't even know if that's something you can share, but is, do you know how, like, is that they bring the kids to Europe or the US or something that's a more modernized? I don't want to sound shitty, but like a more modernized,
It's not shitty if
set of
it's true.
countries. Well, yeah.
No, man. So I have to be very, very careful here. So I'm gonna be very vague. Not because I'm a super cool guy, but just because it's required. After extraction and rescue, the children are placed in a private, essentially foster home. Who then look after them through means that they have. And as much as I would like to talk about movements or placement or
Oh,
anything like
yeah.
that, I can't. But the main reason there, the main thing I say there, right, is again, it's private. It's not a South African foster home because we have trafficking issues in our foster system here in the States. You can imagine how much issues they have with that exact same problem over there.
What do you mean government corruption is a is an issue outside the United States too?
Dude,
It's not
isn't
just
that
us.
crazy?
Yeah,
Isn't that crazy and wild?
you can't just trust the government. No, I mean, and that's, and honestly, I think that's just like, that's probably even the bigger part of the whole picture. Not, and that's not to take anything away from what you guys do with the rescue work, the extraction work and everything, but like in the grant, that could be 6 hours, right? Whatever. That's the next 6 months, 6 years for these kids and cost associated with that, feeding them, clothing them. I'm assuming there's probably a moderate to large degree of medical issues with a lot of these kids, because I'm assuming the condition, like, can you talk about any of that? Like, what are the situations you find over there like? I'm assuming it's probably pretty rough.
No, it's not always great, man. Again, but it's just where are they, right? What are you hitting, right? So, for example, if it's a regular trafficking route, you're gonna find some, you're gonna hit a structure out in the densely populated parts of the country, and it's gonna be dirty, it's gonna be gross. There was an op that we ran where there was 7 girls in one very small room, smaller than the office that I'm currently sitting in. And there was a singular twin size, what looked to be about a twin size mattress, right? And there's 7 children in there.
Yeah.
You can see the dirt on their face, you can see their clothes are disheveled, you can see just the filth that they're in. So you get things like that. If it's in the Zama caves, it's a kid that's been in a fucking cave for the last year. And you can imagine the issues with that. Now there's also the trafficking side of things where, like we said, it's the more oligarchian kind of luxury things, and those ones might be at least bathed and things like that. But again, it doesn't make the situation any better, right? But no, there are definitely it's It's very much dependent on where is the rescue taking place, and that's going to determine the relative state of which they're found in.
Yeah, because I mean, yeah, like you said that the, I guess the nicer part, nicer side of the oligarchy and like what we're talking about, right? Just that's presentation value is what that is like, hey, well, because they're trafficking, right? So it's about money. It's
Yeah,
not necessarily
it's
about
not that they give a shit about the kid, it's that they want
exact,
their patron to be pleased, right? And
yeah. Which doesn't mean that they don't have additional medical issues from how wherever they came from before that, you know, or just born with, because that's a thing too, right? Like sometimes you get dealt a shitty hand in life without the trafficking piece, let alone where you can end up because of where you were born. And when you guys are doing this, you know, I mean, the trips are, I'm assuming it's pretty expensive getting over there and everything. So are you guys doing multiple hits per trip? Is this like, you know, hey, we're gonna plan, I don't know, 3 to 7 while we're there, because we're there for 3 days or something, we can fit it in. What's your like op tempo, I guess is what I would, the term I would use, right? While you're there, how much impact are you guys able to make while you're there?
So I can't get into that too much. But the what I'll tell you what we're working toward, right? And it will be essentially 3 month rotations, right? To where, you know, we have enough time to build, develop cases and things like that. Because so one thing that we're really kind of prioritizing in this coming year is trying to get more at dismantling the networks opposed to playing a game of whack-a-mole, right? So where the current operational pace has been, here's a tip, here's something to look at, right? And then, you know, we work on building the case and obtaining the necessary steps in order to go execute that rescue and rescue the kids, place the kids, right? And that's awesome. Now we're trying to kind of go up a tier, if you will, and start looking at how many rungs up the ladder can we go, right? How can we best affect these massive networks, or these, what they're called out there, they're called syndicates, right? It's our word for gangs, or their word for our gangs. How can we affect these syndicates more totally and more wholly with one fell swoop, right? So the intention of some of the missions will start to take a little bit longer, but we're hoping that they'll have more of a market impact and hopefully make an actual dent in this issue. Again, it's too big of an issue for just us to end, right? As much as I would love to be like, oh, I'm gonna end this problem, it's not realistic, man. It's too massive of a problem. But if at the end of the day, I know that we made as much of an impact and as much of a difference as we could with our time and with our effort, that's the goal.
And so when you guys are, you're able to go over there right now, right? You're able to be effective, you're able to be impactful, and there's plans for future growth to make that even more so. How is it working with the government over there? Because it's not like it, for you guys as I guess it's like private, here it'd be private citizens, right? Be able to come together and do this stuff. And again, it's much different here because we're more stable. We don't have the same kind of issue here. It's the issue's treated differently in the continental United States. How is that treated when you guys are over there? Because I if I'm remembering from the conversation with Irish, like there was a remarkably low number of convictions made every year for trafficking, almost to the point where it's like the government is aware of all of it and just would rather not acknowledge its existence. It's more convenient to ignore the problem, basically. So, and I don't know if you can talk any about that, but just because it's always one of those things where people here go, well, I would love to do that shit here, but the government won't let me. And it's like, well, there's different shades of that everywhere you go. What is that like for you guys?
One of the main differences is just the way that our judicial systems work between the two countries. The foundation of what allows us to do what we do And South Africa private security entities can execute, essentially have execute, or I'm sorry, search warrant execute authority. So that's the broad stroke of how this all works,
Okay.
because I want to be clear, like everything that we're doing is completely above board.
Yeah, absolutely.
A lot of people, you know, we've heard plenty of stories of, some super cowboy behavior out there, especially by Americans. And what those dudes don't realize is that they're putting a lot of their South African counterparts in like grave danger. We've had some experiences with that kind of behavior. So it's one of those things, like, you know, obviously we need as many good people in the fight doing this as possible, but in the event this is a route that you decide to take for your own, like, do it right. Understand that it might be, you know, a faraway land for you, but that is someone's home. And in the event that you befriend a South African, they're amazing people. Amazing, amazing people. But in the event that you befriend and work alongside them out there, like, in the event you blow something up, like, congratulations, now you're probably going to get your friend killed, because you get to go back home. You get to go back to the States.
You get to
You get to
leave.
go back to safety. You get to leave. They
Yeah.
don't. Like, that's their home. They're there, right? So anyways, now that that tangent's over, yeah, man. So essentially everything we do is above board. Long and short of it, we have private entities have the ability to execute search warrants as long as it's done in conjunction with law enforcement. Now with that, I know that the Irish had brought up a statistic that he didn't want to misquote, but I had the actual statistic, so I figured I'd share that with you because it's a really fun one. So from 2010 to 2022, there were over 13,000 reports of human trafficking, like credible, validated reports.
Okay.
And in that time, there were 44 cases that were convicted.
And what was that time frame in a year?
No. That was from 09 to 22.
I'm sorry. Okay, so
Now, one of the main differences that when we look at statistics in the African continent as a whole is, what is the effort, or not efficacy, but what is the detection rate, right? Because we have, like, so stateside, for example, we have really good resources in terms of crisis counseling for people who are victims of crime, and you know, abilities to report incidences and occurrences and things like that. Over there, that's not a thing, right? So you're re relying on external, essentially UN like data subsets in order to determine the occurrence of crime, right? Which you can imagine is horrifically and horrendously underreported and underdetected.
Yeah.
So one of the more important statistics to look at is, what is the conviction rate per year, right?
Well, just doing
So
the
if
math
you
on
have
that, that's 13 years. That's less than four per year on average.
four per year on average.
That's like not, I mean, and it's not even a good four. It's like 3.6 or so. That's like, it's not even like one per business quarter. That's next to nothing. Like they're not.
Exactly.
So you don't have to say this, but I will say this. That is the most inadequate performance by any law enforcement agency, by any metric that I think you could find. Well, and it may not law enforcement, maybe it's a judiciary branch. Again, I don't know how their government's structured. There's differences, right? We were talking about that. But like if you were to copy paste that into America today off our governmental system, that is the most outright just failure you could get to say that you've of an issue that's in the tens of thousands over that same period of time, and you did less than not even half a hundred. Like that's the number. I mean, you can, I mean, numbers can lie, but that's a pretty straightforward evaluation there. 'Cause like you said, the stuff that you were able to validate and confirm, hey, this is real. There's more. There's definitely, this is not a thing where there's going to be less. You know, you inflate numbers on balance sheets, not on this shit. Like it goes the other direction, you know? So like there's way, these are not inflated numbers. This is what you guys are, I'm assuming it's they go on the safer side of those calculations and estimates for what they can
Yeah,
reasonably validate.
it's via USAID. So they're always relatively conservative with, because I mean, it's a It's a multinational reporting organization, you know what I mean? So
Yeah.
they're always going to be relatively conservative with their statistics. But yeah, no, it's a it's a gross inadequacy is I think probably one of the best ways to sum that, you know.
Does it at least seem like, because I know you guys get, you're in the loop on the communications over there with that, with those folks, right? And here people are reaching out because now it's becoming more of a public, like you said, a public public knowledge that Tether Group exists and this stuff's going on. Does it at least seem like it's because it's being more acknowledged? You're seeing more of these groups step up to try and help the overall issue, because that's the worst part, is the question that comes up eventually when you get to this is like, why, how did this ever get this way? And that's a long, convoluted answer, you know, and we don't have time to get into that obviously here, but today, like, because we can't change that anyways, but how, like, is it, are more people stepping up to do the right thing?
I would say yes, both in the private sector and governmentally, over there in terms of their law enforcement. Now, that is not so on their law enforcement side of things. That's not a massive fell swooping statement, but there are definitely subsets of law enforcement out there and other judiciary branch who actually do truly love their country, right? And just like any law enforcement officer or service member out here, like. They want to serve their people. They want to you know protect their country and serve their country, and it's beautiful to see because again, dude, South Africans are awesome people. Like you know, I know that we're essentially looking at all of the bad, right? But there is a lot
Yeah.
of beauty in both the people, the culture, and just the landscape of that country. So there are good people out there that are starting to lead the charge in the public service sector, which is awesome. Now is it enough? No, not even fucking close.
Right.
But I don't ever want to discredit them, right? Because they deserve acknowledgement, they deserve recognition, right? And it sucks, you know, to try to be doing good and everyone just talks shit because of the organization that you're a part
The
of, right?
scale of
So
the battle that you have ahead of you, yeah.
exactly. So there are a lot of good people doing good work out there in terms of their public service sector, as well on the private side of things. Not so much specifically out there. There are a couple of other organizations that also work out there, but there's a handful of multinational organizations that are doing good work just across the globe. And that is one of the goals of Tether is to be able to grow and scale to that size of operation to where we can impact with a we can just make wider impact, right? I mean, it's not an issue that affects one country or one continent, right? This is a prevalent issue everywhere, literally everywhere.
Yeah.
And there's never going to be enough people that are doing something about it. But we're going to try to do as much as we can.
Yeah. The more you can grow, the more you can do the wider net you can cast, right? That's the tough part is, you guys, I'm sure, figured this out. Like, and I come from a product oriented background, so some of this, the way it connects, it's easy to get a good idea. Like, hey, we should go fight human trafficking. Like, good idea. And then, right, like being able to scale on that idea, even like with what you guys have figured out, which is tremendous and much more than anybody, than most folks, right? I won't say anybody because I don't know what else is out there, but than many folks know to do. You're talking about building it, and people go, "Why don't you just go do more here? Go, hey, I know this country's got this issue," and it's like, well, being able to scale that solution, that idea is a lot of work, and you with a lot of work comes, you need a lot of money too, and it's never a very it's never an easy proposition to walk into that and just go, "Hey, I've got the answer. Here you go." Like, if that was the case, you know, so I'm sure somebody rich would have done it by now, or figured out a way how to make money off of doing it by now. But at any rate, it would have been done, you know. But yeah, so I think what you guys are doing is, like, honestly, it's incredible, you know, and especially like yourself, no, because we put a lot of value. And I'm not gonna go on this rant here, but a lot of value in people being able to say that they were vets in the military, and I love our armed services and I support them. There are parts of it that just bother the shit out of me, mostly because of YouTube, but you know, it's fine. But you were able to do it as a civilian, not having, you know, that piece of your background which people seem to hold so necessary to be able to be effective in this way. So for any guys listening to think that you can't do good works out there in the world, like you can, just because you didn't serve doesn't, it's not a roadblock. Like I hope people listen to this and get inspired. Now do it the right way. You know, we talked about getting fit, training. We talked about it's not just like, hey, I'm gonna wake up tomorrow and go do this, but it is possible. And because I know we're kind of pushing up towards time here, where can people reach you if they have questions about anything we talked about here on the trafficking side, on the prevention, on anything what they can do to help, or if they have questions around, you know, your story or maybe just physical fitness? I don't know. Where can people reach out and connect with you?
Yeah, man. My pseudo personal page on Instagram is at AC underscore bully. You also have the main page, which I'll also be on occasion, which is at almost underscore covert. And then the Tether page as well, which is at tether dot group. Now, one thing that I would encourage everyone to do is go check out the website, tethergroup.org. Sign up to the email newsletter there. I have some really cool stuff getting ready to roll out here. I just wanted to make sure that I wasn't spamming everyone's inboxes with a bunch of nonsensical bullshit because it pisses me off when that happens, and I'm not going to do that to you guys.
I was gonna say, but there's so many people that already do it. Why not? A
I've tried to be a little different here,
little
but yeah, man,
considerate,
I'm always an open book, man. So if anyone has any questions, just hit me on AC Bully. We'll be able to hash it out, but. No, I do love, you kind of highlighting that aspect of the it's you don't have to have a DD214 to make an impact. Obviously, yeah, it's a little bit of a roadblock, right? Like, a lot of people when I tell them I'm a civilian, they look at me a little sideways, but it's all right. I've had the privilege and the fortune of training alongside some incredibly exceptional individuals, like truly, truly exceptional individuals. Both from the Leo side of things to the active side of things to the retired side of things. And one thing I would just encourage everyone, man, is just like always be a student in every conversation and every interaction. Like, see what you can learn and what you can take away because there's so much out there for you to learn.
Yeah,
So much.
absolutely. And I appreciate the time. I appreciate the story, the information, all of it, man. It's really, it kind of sucks to be, I don't know how else to say it. Like it's great and terrible at the same time hearing about it, you know? So I appreciate you being willing to come out and share. I appreciate all the work you guys are doing. I think it's fantastic stuff. And I implore anyone who thinks they have a way that they can help contribute to this, like, and it doesn't have to be physically. If there's other resources or anything like that, you guys can help, like, by all means, try to do better in this world. So, dude, I appreciate the time. I'd love to do this again in the future. Sit down, talk about what you guys are doing. I think you can't talk about it enough, honestly. But yeah, man, I love it. Thank you so much. And you stay safe, and we'll be in touch.
Yeah, I appreciate that, man. Thank you again for allowing us to hijack now two sessions off of
Yeah, yeah.
your podcast here. So we'll continue to infect you as time goes on. But yeah, brother. I appreciate you, man. I'm sure we'll be able to chat here soon.
I think that was a fantastic follow-up to the discussion that we had a couple months ago with Irish. And I say a couple months, I don't actually know when it was. My sense of date and time really skew with this. You guys who've been listening for a while, you know that. But man, the work that these guys are doing, I think that it's this transformative process, this effort, right, to be wholly effective and impactful in the world in a big way, you know, regardless of the size of their effort. It's a large impact, you know. This is the kind of stuff that I think a lot of people in our community would have the internal dialogues with themselves on. Hey, I would do that if there were a way. And unfortunately, I'll say in even more instances, this is something that a lot of people say they would do to other people, right? If, you know, if only there were a way, and they really don't. these gentlemen with Tether Group, you know, Almost Covert, really did, and he mentioned it, you know, in the conversation that, hey, we can only half-ass this so long. We can donate supplies and things like that. We want to be wholly effective. We want to really make a tangible change to the situation that is, you know, in South Africa. And yes, We talked about this with Irish too. Yes, there's issues here on the U.S. soil, right? There's here at home an issue of human trafficking, right? Which, yeah, you can get super political with it. We can point fingers at the Biden administration, open borders, and that wouldn't even be incorrect. I wouldn't even say it would be inappropriate to say that. I think there's a healthy amount of acknowledgement that needs to go into that. Yes, I do agree with that. But if we're talking about constructive ways to deal with this, if we're talking about ways to address this situation, right, here in the U.S., can we do this? Not exactly, because our law enforcement situation is very, very different. And we have many agencies that are working to combat this issue, right, and help solve the problem of human trafficking. But I will say with that that we need to, in some instances, on a global political, geopolitical, stage, maybe not so much. We do a lot around the world as a country, but look at what we outside of our government can do for our neighbors around the globe, right? And I think that's a great example of it. And if you really want to make impactful change, this is a fantastic. I can't think of any better way. It's incredible stuff. It's an incredible effort, right? To just be better people, make the world a better place, find, work to make it a better place than what you found it in a lot of instances. So I have nothing but, the utmost respect for the whole team over at, Almost Covert, Tether Group. And I look forward to being able to have more of these conversations with them. I really do. I think it's well and good that we talk a lot about human trafficking, thoughts and prayers, all that. Oh, here, I'll donate $5 to whatever organization. I mean, that's good. I'm not saying that that's a bad thing, but in the grand scheme of what can be done, if you're not actively bringing visibility to this, if you're not actively talking about it or contributing in a major way, are you really doing enough? And I don't mean that in terms of like, hey, you and your friends have a talk about it over at the bar. I mean, what are you doing to get the message out there? What are you doing to help combat this or support the agencies, the individuals, the teams, the organizations that are fighting these? Organizations like Deliver Fund. There's a wonderful charity organization or charity event, rather, I'm sorry, that I have attended the last 3 years where the funds, the dues or the fees, right, to participate, go directly back to Deliver Fund to combat human trafficking. The event was literally called the Human Trafficking Awareness Range Day, put on by a couple friends of mine, tremendous dudes that are trying to do a really good thing out there in the world, donating tens of thousands of dollars to this cause, right, to try and eradicate human trafficking. I think more events, more efforts like this are needed in our community where people really preach from a high moral standing. Some of you guys have been in this community a while. You get deeper and deeper. You realize that that's kind of a skin deep thing. And a lot of people don't walk the talk, if you know what I mean. So all that to say, like, I do hope that this is an illuminating discussion. And if you guys are listening here for the first time and you haven't had the chance to check out the interview I did with Irish, I would implore you to go back, find that episode, right, and go listen to that as well, because it helps form a more complete picture of what Almost Covert was, is now, and what they will be, right, with the formation of Tether Group and their goal, right, their mission to help fight human trafficking. It's an incredible story. You guys are doing really, really good work, and in ways that I think most of us would get behind. Like, you're training here, you're learning these skills, you're employing them for a good purpose, not, doing stuff that, maybe later in your life you would have moral issue with, like some of the military action we've taken for our country over the last 50 years, right? People, him and haw over whether they agree or disagree with that. Maybe there are ways for you to do these things and do it in a way that you agree with. I don't know. Maybe that's something for you to figure out. We don't get into that here, but I do want to say thank you guys for listening to this week's episode, this week's discussion, and making it this far with me. Like I said, we're a week out from SHOT Show, so in a week's time, I'll be in sunny Las Vegas, which will be a nice change of pace from the weather here in Michigan. Look forward to connecting with the homies. And if you guys are still listening at this point, I meant to put this in the recording earlier. If you're still listening and you want to connect, right? You want to touch base, you want to meet up, even if it's just for a snack or a drink or something while you're in Vegas, I'm on Instagram. Hit me up on Instagram. Love to catch up with as many people as I can while I'm there. I'm only in town for a couple days, but want to make the absolute most of it while we're there on site. So looking forward to that. I hope you guys enjoyed this discussion and had some good, strong takeaways. That's all for me. More to come with next week's discussion. And until next time, you guys stay safe out there. And like we always say here, work hard, train smarter, and be prepared.